Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. I see it all so clearly now. The choices I made, the things I carried. I never meant for it to end this way. I never wanted to cause you pain. From where I stand now, my heart is full of nothing but love for you. I am sorry for the weight you've had to carry, for the silence I left behind. I know it all happened so fast, and I never got the chance to say goodbye. But I need you to know the moment I crossed over, I was met with peace. My dad was there waiting for me. But I haven't left you. I could never leave you. I walk with you one day, one step at a time. Every time you feel me close, trust that it's real. Every sign, every whisper, every flicker of warmth, that's me. You were my light then, you still are now, and I promise I'll keep guiding you always.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here as your hosts. We are joined by Vicky Connell. We are thrilled and honored to have Vicky here with us. A few weeks ago, we received an email from Vicky that she's been a listener and that we are her favorite podcast, right?
Absolutely.
Just kidding. I might have thrown that one in there. But we love getting those kinds of emails and people willing to come on and share their story. We love that, Vicky, you're comfortable enough with us. We've never met in person. But that's something that is humbling for us when we have people that feel comfortable enough to be able to come and sit with us and share their story. So thank you so much for reaching out. We're thankful and we're honored. I'll go ahead and turn it over to you. Give a brief little introduction. And I would also love, I didn't tell you this before, sorry. But I would love for you to maybe tell something a little quirky or weird about you that not everybody knows.
Okay.
And if you don't have anything, if you don't have anything weird or quirky, then I guess don't say anything.
There's plenty weird and quirky. I just don't know if it's something that no one knows. I'm such an open book that most people probably know me pretty well. But as you said, I'm Vicky Connell. I am a native to Arizona. I've lived here my whole life. I love it here. I love the diversity that you can travel a couple hours and have a completely different weather climate. I have three sons, one of which we'll be talking about in today's podcast. Two are twins that just turned 20. And I will be getting remarried here in a couple weeks, a day after Christmas. So that's an exciting thing to plan.
That's so exciting. Congratulations.
It is exciting, especially with this last year. You know, and what we've been through, which I'll talk about. It is something to bring some joy to our family. So,
congratulations!
Yes,
thank you. Yeah.
So that could be and a fun little fact about you.
Yeah, there's a fun fact. And, you know, some people know that. You know, quite a few people know we're engaged, but we just decided to do it the day after Christmas because a lot of his family were coming in. He's from South Dakota, so I just said, you know what, everyone's coming to Arizona. Why don't we just get married now? So that's what we decided.
I love that.
So Vicky, go ahead and get going on what you feel compelled to share with everybody.
Okay. So I'm going to give you just a brief history to give you a little background. I'm not going to go on and on about this other part of my story, but Black Friday of 2019, so just on the cusp of COVID, my husband was diagnosed with cancer. And it was a very difficult challenge through, you know, with our three boys, and we walked him through that journey, and he fought it for 14 months and we lost him. And of course, as a mom, you become very concerned about how your children are going to handle that. And he passed at home. We were all here. And in that moment and through that journey, I felt very supported by his family, by my family. I felt God's presence through it. I know this kind of sounds funny, but I got a lot of inspiration from social media, believe it or not. I would go through Facebook and there would be scriptures every day that were exactly what I needed to hear. And I was just very, like I said, I felt that presence. I felt constant confirmation as we walked through that journey. And my oldest son, Hunter, was 20 at the time. And he had shown some signs of depression, certainly, of some anxiety. He had social anxiety. COVID was a challenge. You know, walking through Chad's sickness during COVID was a big challenge. But he actually liked the fact that he didn't have to go to school because he became kind of socially introverted. And right after their dad died, I feel like he had this kind of had this purpose. Like he was filling the man of the house shoes, and he was very helpful to me. And he was very helpful when his dad got to the point where I physically needed help, getting him in a wheelchair and things like that. And then, you know, as life went on, our twins were very active in school. They're just the opposite. They're very social. They play baseball. They have lots of friends. And I started to go back to normal life, and, you know, all the COVID restrictions were lifted. So we were able to kind of live again. And I watched my son deteriorate mentally. And, I offered a lot of help and a lot of assistance to him. He's very reluctant, you know, of course, therapy. And as things progressed, I could see things getting worse and worse for him. And so there was some delusional thinking. There were some very odd behaviors and things that were very, very concerning to me. And I just constantly prayed, you know, give me wisdom, God. I don't know how to handle this. You know, we get the book as parents of what to expect when you're expecting, and you know, all the things on having a baby, but it's very difficult to navigate when you have an adult child that's struggling because you can't commit them against their will. They can check themselves out of institutions or therapy programs, and it's very difficult. And it progressed to the point where, you know, I was actually getting really scared. I was very concerned for his safety. And one night I had a work function. I was gone all day, and I just had that mom sense of something isn't right. I didn't see my son that morning. It was actually my twins' birthday. And, you know, I woke them up to say goodbye because I was leaving to go to this work event. And my oldest son, Hunter's door was locked. And I thought, that's kind of strange. He, you know, he'll shut his door for privacy, but he didn't typically lock the door. And I thought, okay, well, I'll give that a minute and I'll see what happens. So the entire drive, I had about a 40, 45 minute drive to the function where I was going, and I'm calling and texting and calling and texting, and no response. And we couldn't have our cell phones out during this function. And so at lunch, being a lunch break, and I call my sons, I said, have you seen Hunter? Where is he? No, he's still in his room. You need to check on him. I know he's reclusive and he hides out in his room, but something's not right. And called my now fiance, but boyfriend at the time. And I said, have you heard from Hunter? No, no one's heard from him. Okay. So we stayed until dinner. This event went all the way through dinner. And I'm driving home and I just have this pit in my stomach. And I'm calling my twins again. And I said, have you seen Hunter today? No. You know, he's been in his room all day. I said, you need to unlock that door. I said, I am sorry, but you need to make sure he's still alive. You need to make sure he's still breathing. I need you to open that door. And I know they were terrified and I hated to put him in that position, but I'm like, something is wrong. So they open the door. They, you know, we have locks on our door, but they have these, you know, if you put a little tiny screwdriver in there, you could pop the lock. So they pop the lock and they said, no, he's just laying in his bed. You know, he responded to us because that's, you know, I said, is he responsive? Yeah. Is he breathing? I don't know. How do we tell if he's breathing? And I said, put your head up against him. You know, I don't know. They're like, yeah, he's breathing. He's kind of mumbling. Okay. So I'm driving home as fast as I can. And I walk in the door and he's barely comatose. And I see a bottle of vodka in the bed. And he had been prescribed gabapentin. And there's a half a bottle of pills on the floor. And I had no idea how many he had taken. So I call the ambulance. They come and get him. And they, you know, he hadn't eaten for 2 days, come to find out. And so his blood sugar was, I forgot what they told me it was, in the 20s or something when they had taken his blood sugar. So they took him by ambulance to the hospital. And I follow suit. And when I got there, once I realized he was going to be okay, you know, they had gave him some glucose. He was drunk, but alive. And I remember thinking, this is what I needed. This is the answer to prayer. This is the door opening. Because I needed him to be a threat to himself in order for me to commit him against his will. They called a 5150 petition. And I thought, okay, this is what I needed. And I pulled the nurse aside. They had him on suicide watch. They had a nurse sitting in there. He saw me. Of course, I'm a wreck. He's apologizing to me. You know, I'm sorry, Mom. And I just said, baby, why did you feel like you had to do this? You know, you don't have to do this. Like, we can get through this. And I don't even remember in the moment what all I said. But I remember pulling the nurse aside and telling her, listen to me, I want you to understand this was an attempt of his life. I need you to help me get him help. How do I petition him? How do I get someone in here that will commit him to get help? He needs help. And she, well, you know, and she kind of walked through this scenario of, well, a social worker, although they have a different title now, the social worker will come in and they'll talk with him. And if he voluntarily, you know, agrees, then we'll try to get him to, you know, a behavioral health clinic that's known out here. And so I still left there thinking, okay, I'm going to get him some help. Finally, we're going to get some real help. I left there because she said it would take a long time. 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I got a call from the social worker. I told her a few things about Hunter's history and losing his father, and she was aware of it. So Hunter was talking, which is rare because he wasn't a talker. He bottled a lot of things. And she told me that he willingly agreed to go to this behavioral clinic. And I said, thank you, God. I said, okay, that's fantastic. And she said, we'll call you when we get him there. So he did go. I was calling him every single day. He sounded good. He sounded uplifted. He was talking every day. He was talking about how some activity that they were doing. He was talking about how they had, they brought horses in today, Mom. Oh, they brought a dog in today. That looks just like Kobe because he had a border collie. And I was so encouraged. And so then he said, you know, they want me to stay till Friday, but I don't want to stay till Friday. I really want to come home on Wednesday. And I really didn't want him to come home sooner. I wanted him to do the full, I think it was 7 days. And Hunter's very smart. He's very manipulative. He knows how to play the system. And he knew what to say to them to get out of there. He had decided he was done and he wanted to get out of there. So I called, and the discharge coordinator called me because they had to release him to someone. I knew Hunter was in the room, so I was very careful with what I said. But as soon as we hung up, I called her back and I left her this message. And I said, you can't let him come home. We have to get him into a program. Please call me back and help me figure out what we're going to do. no callback. Okay, so I go and I pick him up, and I am praying the entire way there. Yeah, I had a lot of anxiety about picking him up and what I was going to say. Lord, give me the words. Help me to be able to talk him into going somewhere, some sort of program. And I picked him up. He gave me a big hug. We no more got on the freeway, and it became very, he was very agitated, very combative. And I thought, oh no, this is not going the way I wanted it to go. And he got home, and you could tell he was just like almost crawling out of his skin. He was extremely agitated. He kept talking about this prescription that they had him on, and he wanted to get this prescription filled because he felt good on it. I was agreeable to those things. The next day I call the clinic back and I leave a message for the director. And I literally said, please help me. He is not himself. He's combative. He's angry. He's on a rampage about this medication. I said, I don't know what to do here. I need your help. No callback. So I thought, okay, fine. I got to take this into my own hands. I was already seeing a therapist after I lost my husband and trying to navigate Hunter, because it was very difficult for me to understand what was mental illness, what was grief and loss for him and losing his dad, and what was just being a punk 21-year-old who didn't want to be an adult and thought that he was very entitled and that he shouldn't have to work and all these different things that I was struggling with. So she put me in contact with a therapy program, an inpatient therapy program. It was a 30-day program. They had an equestrian program. It was like, this is perfect. So we have a little cabin up north. I decided to leave and go to the cabin so that I could make all of these plans. So my twin sons were here. My mom lives with me also. She was here. I wasn't at the time worried about him harming himself, because after he was probably coming off of some of the meds that they had him on, but he had stabilized and he was actively looking for a job. And I'm getting feedback from my mom that, you know, Vicky, he is out, you know, filling out applications. He seems so motivated. In fact, she was even trying to talk me out of getting him therapy because I was kind of sneaking around behind his back to try to put all these things into place because I was so desperate to get him help. So I was on the phone with the intake coordinator at this facility. I was trying to get his medical records transferred. I was doing all these things over this weekend on the phone for hours. We had the whole plan put together. And I was texting Hunter, just, you know, normal corresponding, like, okay, making sure he's okay. I left from the cabin and went straight to work. I had told Hunter when I left for the cabin that I was going into work on Tuesday, that I would be home around 2 o'clock. I actually had my review at 1 and I was planning to come home afterwards, and I had my plan put together. And I thought it was, you know, God-driven. I had this whole plan. And so about an hour before I was going to leave work, I get a call from our landline at my home. And I thought, that's strange. Because we really only use that for, my mom has one of those little life alerts, and that's the only reason I even had a landline, because of our cell phone not always being, you know, getting great coverage. And so that alone just made the hair on my neck stand up. That's weird. Why is she calling me from the landline? And I answer the phone, and I could hardly understand her. And I remember the words, Vicky, something terrible has happened. And I just start screaming, Mom, what is it? Mom, what is it? And she said, fire alarm's going off. There's water everywhere. I can't find Hunter. And that's all I could make out. And I just, what? And I picked up everything and I run out the door and I'm calling my neighbor. I said, can you please figure out what's going on at my house? My mom sent this, you know, called me and had this crazy message. And I don't know what's going on, but I'm 45 minutes away. And it was the longest 45-minute drive of my life. And I can't piece what's going on. And I initially thought Hunter had a little 1985 Porsche that was kind of a collector car that he was working on. And he had lost interest in it. And so I was asking him to sell it and work on it. So initially in my head, I thought he started a fire in the garage. That was my first thought. Not intentionally, but like he was working on the car and a fire broke out. Because why else would the fire alarm be going off? And so my neighbor calls me. And I hear him, and I hear him say, I have the owner of the house on the phone, and he's talking to the fire chief. And he says, that's her mother there, and that's her son. I'm like, okay, Hunter's there. And can you tell her what's going on? And commotion, and I get this gentleman's voice, and the first thing he says to me is, ma'am, does your son have mental problems? And I'm, and I'm stuttering around like, well, yeah, he's been depressed and I've been trying to get him some help. And I'll spare you the details, but he told me what happened. And I just literally, the bottom fell out. And it was like you were driving 100 miles an hour and you hit a brick wall and the seatbelt just jerks you back. Like, no. That's not what was supposed to happen. And my son had hurt himself, but he didn't kill himself yet. And so they said, we have an airway. We're rushing him to the hospital. And I'm thinking, okay, I have no idea what to expect. I'm trying to figure out what to do. I still don't understand what's happened to my house. I have to make sure my mom is okay. I'm calling my boyfriend, please come home. Something terrible has happened. I'm calling my twins who are at work. You know, you have to come home. Something happened to Hunter. So I get home and it looks like a crime scene from CSI. I'll never forget it. There was like ambulance, there's police detectives, there were fire trucks, and my kids are standing out front and my mom is wet with a blanket around her sitting in the chair. And it's so surreal. You know, I can't even wrap my head around what's happening. And I happen to know, which looking back, there was a reason for this, but I see the police detective and I know him. He's a dad from the baseball team. His son played baseball with my sons. And he's walking through the events. And then I get a call from the hospital. And it's the doctor. And she's telling me that she's had an opportunity to evaluate Hunter. And she said his injuries aren't survivable. And I just remember I'm sitting on the sidewalk and I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I just saw him a couple of days ago. My mother is telling me, Vicky, he's doing so good. He's, you know, that morning he agreed to sign up with Telemed. The two of them sat at his computer and he scheduled a Telemed appointment. And then 2 hours later, he physically harmed himself. And I, you know, that's that moment. Your breath is taken away. I went to the hospital. He was not able to speak to me. He was conscious. So they said he was very bandaged from his injuries. And I had to say goodbye. And I don't know how you do that. And I left there. And it was just like, I just remember the room being very hot. I remember the doctor coming to me and it was just words, you know, and I'm hearing him and he's telling me medically what's going on, you know, okay. You know, and I remember sitting down and I told him, I said, I'm hearing you. I can't look at you right now. I just need to sit down. And he knelt in front of me and all I remember, but he had these beautiful blue eyes and he said, I want you to hear me. He said, I'm going to take care of your boy. He will not feel any pain. I will take care of him. I will be with him until he takes his last breath. And I remember being, you know, thank you. But at the same time, I was like, how is this real? You know, and it was overwhelming for me to be in the room. His grandparents were in there. So my late husband's parents and his sister. And hindsight, there's a lot of things I would have liked to do differently. I wish I had some alone time. I wish someone would have come in and said, hey, can you give her a minute? Can she just have a minute with her son? But I finally had to leave once they had determined, okay, we're going to take him off the ventilator. They had a pastor come in and recite the Lord's Prayer. And, you know, we had agreed to allow them to take him off the ventilator. And I had to leave. I couldn't be there. I was just an absolute mess in the waiting area. And I felt like I was making a big scene. And after one little detail that I left out, after my husband passed, my sister-in-law told me, she said, you know, I keep seeing this hummingbird and I keep seeing the number 1111. And I feel like it's Chad telling me he's okay. And I thought, okay, that's cool for you. You know, I hadn't seen that, but okay, that's cool. And after she told me that, there were a couple times where I would be worried about Hunter and I went to check on him. I remember one particular time and he was in the shower and I looked at the clock and it was 1111. And I remember thinking, okay, you've got him. And 3 days before Chad died, we had this very heartfelt conversation. You know, he wanted me to tell him that we were going to be okay. And he wanted to make sure I knew all the passwords and where all the funds were, you know, and all the husbandly things. He wanted to make sure there were no loose ends. And I said to him, I don't exactly know what happens when you die. And I don't know if you'll be able to contact us. I said, but if there's one person that you can contact, please reach Hunter. And he looked at me and he said, Vicki, Hunter's going to be okay. And in that moment, when I walked out of the hospital, I was so mad. And I remember saying, you told me he was going to be okay. He's not okay. And I was so angry, you know, like shortly after I left the hospital, I thought it was going to be just moments that I thought they were going to take him off the ventilator and it was going to be a matter of minutes. It ended up being several hours. And we had gone to a friend's house. We couldn't go back to our house. We had gone to a friend's house and one of my other sons laid with me until I fell asleep. And the phone rang and it was a little after, I don't know, maybe it was 11:30 at night. And it was the same doctor. And they called to let me know that Hunter had passed. And she said, the time of his death was 11:11. And I remember just thinking, how dare you? Like, it made me mad at first. I was like, don't give me that number with my son dying, you know? And I got up and I was just, what does that mean? I don't understand that. That can't be a, you know, a comforting thing. And I just was so angry. And it was so different losing Hunter and losing my first husband, because I felt abandoned this time. I felt like, God, I thought you had everything laid out. I thought we were getting him help. This was supposed to be his testimony. He was supposed to come through on the other side, and this was supposed to be his story on how he made it through. I was angry at the behavioral health center because you discharged him too soon. I was angry at him because my mother was the one that found him. And I was upset with him because how could you do that to your grandmother? He did it on his grandpa's birthday. I'm like, how could you do that to your grandpa? And everything was just anger in me. And I wanted to solve the case. I wanted to figure out what went wrong, what made him snap, what did he do that day? And I'll never know. I'll never have that answer. I've learned to let go of that, but that was initially how I felt. And then again, I started seeing these signs, messages coming through social media, but they were a little different this time. I stumbled across Rachel Stewart, who was on your show, who actually is how I found you, and her 411 together. And I had been seeing hummingbirds and, you know, a couple situations where I'm like, whoa, that was, you know, hummingbird flew right in the garage and almost like he was saying hello to my sons and I and flew out. And then I see this story of her talking about a hummingbird and her husband and how they felt that was her daughter, their daughter saying hello. And I just kind of went, huh, that's interesting. And then it was Father's Day. We were at the cabin, all of our kids. And I don't know, 2 or 3 in the morning, all of a sudden the smoke alarm goes off. And I'm terrified because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is the next disaster. Because once you've had something like this happen, you're still to this day, you're so afraid that something bad is always going to happen. And I flew out of bed. What's going on? And I'm checking on everybody and everybody's okay. And it's like, okay, that was strange. I still don't know what set it off. That next day, Rachel had also posted something about how one night in the middle of the night on Father's Day, their smoke alarm went off for no particular reason. They looked at the clock and it was 4:11. And that was a significant number to them. And I thought, is this possible? Like, is God, is the Holy Spirit, is Hunter giving me some signs that he's still with me? And I wasn't raised to believe that. So I thought, it's pretty skeptical. But it, at the same time, it felt a little comforting. And I thought, oh, I'll take it. Because I have this huge hole in my heart. And it's filling that void just a little bit. And then I remember my dearest friend that I've grown up with. She wanted so desperately to do something for me. And she had me pick out a book. And it's called My Unexpected Journey. And it's written by a woman named Erin Bleckman, who lost her son to suicide. And I bought the book and I sat it on my dresser. I don't want to read that. You know, I read plenty of books when my husband died. I don't need any more books. And this one day I just felt very nudged. Read the book. So I started reading it and just burst into tears because everything she wrote could have been Hunter. Her son's name was Max, and he could have just swapped the names, down to the fact that her son had a border collie, just like Hunter. And it was so helpful for me because she was so raw and honest about her feelings and how she felt and the guilt she felt. And, you know, I blamed myself. I failed him. I was a terrible mother. I should have known. My mom senses weren't going off that day, you know, like they had before. There was nothing in me that felt like something was going to happen that day. And I was so upset with myself. Like, how could I have missed that? You know, God, why didn't you just send me home 2 hours earlier? I could have stopped this. You know, why didn't you intervene? Because there's plenty of stories I've heard of people who, oh, I was about to hurt myself and someone called me and stopped me, or someone walked in the door, or, you know, and it's like, why didn't you intervene? I don't understand. And she told the story of very same as me. I prayed every day for my son and I wanted God to heal him. And then I finally realized God did heal him. It just wasn't the way I wanted. And that was so powerful to me, as much as I hated admitting that, because I wanted him healed on my terms, right? I wanted him here on earth with me, happy and healthy and making me a grandmother one day. That was how I wanted it. And I just thought, okay, that's a different perspective that I never had considered, as hard as it was to accept. And then I came across this, and I had to print it so that I could read it, but I came across this message. I was randomly sitting on the couch with my now fiance and two sons, and I just opened my phone and this message came up, and it was, I don't even know what you call it because it wasn't a video, but it said, I see it all so clearly now. The choices I made, the things I carried. I never meant for it to end this way. I never wanted to cause you pain. From where I stand now, my heart is full of nothing but love for you. I am sorry for the weight you've had to carry, for the silence I left behind. I know it all happened so fast, and I never got the chance to say goodbye. But I need you to know the moment I crossed over, I was met with peace. My dad was there waiting for me. But I haven't left you. I could never leave you. I walk with you one day, one step at a time. Every time you feel me close, trust that it's real. Every sign, every whisper, every flicker of warmth, that's me. You were my light then. You still are now. And I promise I'll keep guiding you always.
Oh my God.
Okay, that can't be a coincidence. You know, my dad was there waiting for me. And then I went back to Chad saying, he's going to be okay. And the 11:11 and the fact that he passed at 11:11. And I thought, okay, that was Chad telling me he had our boy. And he was, or is now, okay. And so I had to start accepting that. I had to let go of the anger. I had to let go of trying to solve the case. I'm not going to know what happened that day. You know, even a psychiatrist probably wouldn't be able to tell me what happened that day. And I've talked about, you know, people will like to say everything happens for a reason. I don't believe that there's a reason my son died. I don't think that, I definitely don't think God put the thought in his head to take his life because there was some reason for that. But it has opened my mind to realize that maybe there is something different than how I was taught on what happens when we die. And if there is still an energy that exists and if there can still be some kind of connection. And so I kind of started testing it and I started asking for pretty specific signs. And so we went on a trip to Oregon. And it was one of those things where, you know, I was, you know, my office was wonderful that I worked for. They allowed me to take the entire month of December off, fully paid. And I just took time to just breathe and process. And so we took this trip to Oregon and we were walking along the coast on this really cool trail. And I was talking to Hunter and I said, show me you're here with me. You know, show me something big. And I saw this bird. You might know, bigger. I want to see a bear. And so we're walking along and I look over and it took my breath away. There is a baby bear. He is on his hind legs. He's like a yearling. He is on his hind legs, perched, looking right at me. And it took me a couple seconds to even resonate what I was seeing. And I just whispered, that's a bear. Oh my gosh, that's a bear. And just the cutest bear I've ever seen in my life. And like I said, maybe a year old, maybe as tall as me. I thought it was a statue. And we both stopped and stared at each other. And then he just dropped to all fours and trotted off. And I was completely speechless. And I hadn't even told DJ, my fiance, that I had asked for that. You know, he just thought, oh, that's cool. We saw a bear. And I said, I asked Hunter for a bear. He's like, you're kidding me. No, I asked him for a bear. And, you know, just several things that trip, you know, that we saw. You know, then it was, he's shown me things through like my fiance also. And, you know, one time I asked for a pink elephant. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm really going to test this. And he was in Canada, hadn't told him anything about that. And he was at walking around at the mall and sent me a picture of an elephant. And I said, why did you send me this picture of this elephant? And he's like, I don't know. I just asked for an elephant today. And I said, you're kidding me, because I've asked for an elephant. I said, it wasn't exactly that. It was, you know, it was more of a realistic picture of an elephant. But I thought, that is uncanny that you and I both asked for an elephant. And I went for a walk in my neighborhood. I went by this rock wall that I've walked by 100 times and something kind of pulled me over there. And here is a painted rock with a little pink elephant painted on this rock. And I just thought, okay, someone, something is telling me, or, you know, is giving me some signs and some, it just warms my heart. You know, whatever you want to say it is from, it's just pretty amazing. You know, and just a lot of little things like that, little signs and big signs. But one thing that, you know, and what I want to ultimately do with this, you know, and obviously your show is about angels. And there were plenty, when I came outside of my anger and I looked back, there were plenty of angels there with me, you know, including DJ. He has suffered a great loss. He lost his mom to cancer. He lost his brother suddenly as I lost Hunter. He didn't take his life, but he died in the middle of the night without explanation, just like that. And, you know, I feel very strongly God put him in my life because there's no one else that would be willing in a new relationship like that to walk with me in this level of grief, this gut-wrenching, rip your heart out kind of grief. And he didn't waver. He, you know, for the first 2 months, he never left my side and he just convinced me to, I found that walking and movement was very helpful for me. And every day he encouraged me to just get up and we're going to go hike and we're going to be in nature. And, you know, my friend who gave me the book, you know, and being with someone in grief is awkward. It's clumsy. You don't know what to say. You think you have to have the magic words, but you don't. You just need to be willing to be with that person, you know, and I feel like God showed her this book that was so powerful for me. And even, you know, even my twin sons, they were a complete accident. We were not planning for them. You know, Hunter was very much planned. I wanted a little boy so badly. And then all of a sudden, you know, 4 years later, we have these twins, a complete surprise. And I knew just the way they came into the world, you know, my delivery story and all of it, I knew they were special. And I knew they had a purpose. And I told them after we lost Hunter, I said, you know, I always knew you guys were special, but I had no idea how special, because if it wasn't for you, I would have lost my entire family. You are literally my only family I have left. And, you know, my son said, wow, Mom, that's really profound. And I said, but it's true, because if I didn't have you, I don't know how I'd walk through this. There's no way, you know, and I had these pivotal people in my life. And I listen, there's a gentleman who has not a podcast, but he just posts on social media and he lost his son. And he's called Phil the Grief Guy. And he said for him, once he stopped focusing on the why and started focusing on the what, things changed for him. And I, that was so powerful for me because I was so focused on why did he do this? Why did this happen to our family? Why did you take two people out of my life? And one so horrifically, like it's ridiculous how horrific. And once I started looking at, okay, what am I going to do with this? And what can I, how can I help others in this? And I always had this little thought early on, shortly after I had Hunter, I had this little thought of start a ranch. I don't know how to start a ranch. I don't know anything about horses. But that was the one thing that resonated with Hunter was horses and animals. And so I said, okay, but pause that thought for a minute because I'm not mentally or emotionally ready. So it hadn't quite been a year. November was just a year. And I decided, okay, I'm just going to be open and explore and see what becomes of this. And so I started talking about it a little more publicly. And it's amazing how many people know people that have horses and have a ranch and have these therapy programs. And so I've gotten plugged in with a couple people and I'm just seeing where it goes. I don't know if that means that I will become a therapist and work with equestrians, or I will just facilitate the environment. My ultimate dream would be truly to have a ranch someplace where young men, of course, my heart's going to be with young men who are struggling mentally and emotionally, can come and physically stay, and they can be exposed to different animal therapies and lots of different therapies, you know, with licensed therapists, not me. And maybe that just means I find the property, you know, I work for a home builder, I work in real estate construction, you know, maybe I just facilitate that and I bring in these other people. But that's something that I've just been putting out there. And if I could save one family from going through this, you know, it would be worth it. And another kind of funny sign, Hunter loved hiking and loved the outdoors. And we went to this water hole where kids were cliff jumping. And I just wanted to kind of go off by myself and just talk to Hunter. I just talked to him a lot. And I kind of looked over and I saw this children's toy, which was the Marvel character, the Captain America shield. And I kind of laughed. And I was like, oh, yeah, that makes me think of Hunter because he loved Marvel characters. And then shortly after that, I just stumbled across some videos on Jeremy Renner. And I don't know if you know his story with the horrific accident that he had. He was run over by a snow cat, and it's a horrific story. And he wrote a book, and it's an excellent book. There's some expletives in it, but the overall premise of the book is very good. And I just felt compelled to read his book. I actually got it on audio tape so I could listen to it from work. But he just talks about, there's so many other nuggets within that book besides just him getting through that journey of the physical pain and, you know, physical therapy and everything he had to do to get back to where he is. But it resonated with me because I could substitute his accident with Hunter's death. And there were a lot of things that resonated. And I thought, okay. And he just talked about how things in his life, when he didn't even realize it, gave him the tools to make it through that accident, and things that he had learned even as a child that he focused on, because he laid on the ice for like 45 minutes, could hardly breathe. It's called my next breath. And so I was kind of like, well, that's interesting, because Jeremy Renner was a Marvel character. He was Hawkeye in the Marvel series. It's kind of funny that I, you know, stumbled across that. But then he talks about he's created this camp, and he calls it Renovation. And it started where he refurnished vehicles, and it was a ride for these kids to go to camp. And he focuses on kids that are in the foster care system. And so he's now created this huge camp in this kind of ranch. You might not have the animals, I don't know. And it was interesting because he talked about kind of how he built that. I'm like, oh, this is super interesting. Now, granted, Jeremy Renner has a little more money and notoriety than I have. But he talked about a friend of his who was with him during that accident, and he bought a boat, and he wanted to use this boat to take the kids out on rides on the lake, because this is in Lake Tahoe where he has this camp. And the name of his boat was Risk Reward. The license plate on my Jeep is Risk Reward. So I was just like, I'm not exactly sure what all that means, but, you know, I was just seeing all these different things, and I'm like, okay, well, here's a story where someone took an idea and has created this camp for, I don't know what he's up to, thousands of kids that they truck in to just make them feel connected for a week. And so I just started thinking, like, what can I do? And my story hasn't been fully told, but there are parts of me that would like to write a book, you know, that encompasses my entire story and different rabbit holes that I could go down with this. But I just wanted to start speaking about it because I've been very private. I have not publicly announced that I lost my son. I have hand chosen who I told. But that also gave me a lot of anxiety because I'm afraid to go to the grocery store because I'm afraid I'll run into someone who doesn't know and they're going to ask me about Hunter. And it happens. And I read something that said, you know, when you lose someone to suicide, you grieve and defend them at the same time. You're mourning the person you love while trying to protect them from judgment. And it's such a hard thing to talk about or admit that you lost your son to suicide, you know, and I don't want his legacy to end with that, you know, and that's what I told my sons. Like, the last 3 years that Hunter was on earth with us, they were difficult. He was in a lot of pain emotionally, and he wasn't the easiest to be around. And sometimes he was outright nasty, you know? And at first, that's what my other twins remembered. And they saw how much it hurt me, and they saw how much it hurt their family. And they were angry with him too. But I remind them, it's like, but I had 20 years with Hunter. He was 23 when he died, but I had 20 years with him that weren't awful. You know, he was still my son. We still have all these wonderful memories as a family. And I put together a photo book for them to help remember some of those better times. And it's hard to look at. You know, I have pictures, you know, around the house, and in the beginning, like, I couldn't even look at them. I just have to walk really fast and just hardly look at them because it was too painful to even look at them. But I don't want Hunter to be defined by the way he died. The thought of that breaks me. So I really want to come up with what I can do to keep his legacy alive, but not that part of it, you know? because there were good parts of Hunter. You know, he, like I said, he was very supportive to me when we lost their dad. So I'm still looking to see what that is. But, you know, I've met some amazing people in this equestrian therapy program, and I 100% believe God put them in my path. One couple that we stayed with in Estes Park, and she has a therapy program, and they invited us into their home, complete strangers, only on referral from a mutual acquaintance. We stayed with them for a couple days, and she let me work with her horses and taught me all this amazing thing, because I don't even know anything about horses. I've ridden a horse maybe 4 or 5 times, and that's it, you know, and she taught me all these amazing things about them. And they were just such beautiful, loving, caring people. And that's, you know, I've met 3 different people on referrals from friends that have therapy programs of some, and they're a little different. Each one is just a little different. But it's just very eye-opening and beautiful to see what a horse can do. And, you know, I just know that I somehow ultimately want to be involved in that.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. I don't know how to say this, but anytime that I've ever heard of something similar, not that it's at all any comparison, but I think of someone who is an addict, right? I have family members who are addicted to whatever the case may be, and we like mourn that person that we once knew, right? But that their addiction is just a small piece of, you know, who they are. And if we can just remember those good moments and latch on to those moments, like that's what defines them, is not the addiction, not the pain, not the, you know, obviously he was going through something. Maybe, you know, maybe we don't know, but he was going through something, and COVID had a lot to do with these kids and what they went through. And I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I think that, yeah, there's so much to him that you can, you know, put out there in public, and yeah, his legacy can live on. And it's a beautiful thing that you're finding these little pieces of him throughout, and he's obviously still there with you, and incredible. So,
and I used to think, you know, I remember telling my therapist one time, it's like, okay, God, if you know, I wanted this child so badly. I wanted him. I wanted a boy. I wanted him. It was like he was my world until the twins came along, and then I had to make room for 3. Jump from 1 to 3. But I remember thinking, you know, if you were going to give me a child that was broken, why didn't you give me the tools to fix him? You know, and that was my initial thinking. Like, at least if you're going to give me a child that's broken, give me the means to help him, because you just feel so helpless as a parent that can't help your child. And I won't know the answer to that, but it wasn't my job to fix him, obviously. And, you know, there's so many things I go back and, well, if I would have done this differently, or like I said, if I would have come home Monday night instead of Tuesday, if I would have done X, Y, and Z, he'd still be here. And I was even mad at my late husband, thinking, if you were still alive, he would still be alive. If you hadn't gotten cancer and died, Hunter would still be here. You know, just ridiculous things that I was just angry about. But again, I have to look at, like what Erin Bleckman said in her book, that God did heal him. It just wasn't the way I wanted. And my sons, you know, early on, I remember saying, you know, I can accept their dad's death, but I can't accept Hunter's death. And they're like, why? What's so different? And I said, well, towards the end, your dad was miserable. And I wanted him to go home. I wanted him to be at peace. And one of my sons looked at me and said, Mom, Hunter was miserable. And it's like, ah. I didn't think of it that way. And you, as a society, we just, you know, there's a physical illness, cancer, it's more accepted. You know, when it's a mental illness, it's hard for us to wrap our brain around it. You know, there isn't this clear cut way to fix it, to treat it. And it's so reliant on the individual's cooperation and participation in their own, you know, mental health. And I don't know why he was so reluctant to get help. He thought he could fix himself. You know, mom, I've got this. I'm okay. You know, we did have him in therapy for a brief time. There was one other time we had him for 3 days, you know, and he said, mom, I'm not like those people. I'm not that bad. I can fix this, you know, and then it became very apparent, no, you can't fix this, son. You know, you need help. But he had lost his will to live at that point. He didn't want to be fixed. And that's heartbreaking, you know, and because obviously that's not our dream for our children. And it's just a very hard reality for me to accept, you know, but I've learned a lot about grief. And sometimes I think, well, maybe that is more my calling, is walking along people in their grief, because I'm walking it. Like it never goes away. I'm never going to wake up one morning and be over it and feel like, oh, okay, I'm good now. It's something that I have to learn to carry with me. And I've had to learn, you know, Hunter's birthday was in October. I had to come up with, okay, what am I going to do to honor him? Because that's still a really special day for me. And like I said, he loved hiking. So we went on this beautiful trail in Sedona, which if you've ever been to Sedona, beautiful red rocks. It's stunning. And I painted a couple rocks and I left them on the trail. And that was honoring to me. And then we had like a, you know, special just little ceremony at home. We wrote some messages on balloons and released them and made his favorite meal. And that felt good to me. You know, the anniversary of his death, I didn't even want to acknowledge. Like it's not a date. Like some people can say, oh, that's when they gain their wings. It's their angelversary. I'm not there yet. I don't like that date. That's not a date that I can celebrate in any regard. Because, you know, there was so much trauma that came with that date also. But yeah, this is my focus this year. You know, maybe my New Year's resolution is really to focus on, okay, what does God want me to do with this? And that's part of the reason why, you know, I'm putting myself out here on your show. If it helps anybody, if someone listens to it and they, hey, I have a great idea for what you can do. I'm all ears.
I want to say something really quick that just came to my mind. I think that it's so fascinating to think, like, you painting those rocks, like, right, you found that pink elephant, whether that was him doing it or someone did it for God, for you in that moment, like, God is doing these things, having these people do these things. You painting a rock could be the thing that whatever you painted on that rock, someone could see it and that could have been their sign, right?
An
answered prayer. Yeah. And I think that it's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's why we partially wanted to do this, so that we can help other people. Something that you might have said could help someone else and been like, that is what I needed to hear, like, all along. Mm-hmm. And whether this is true or just made up in my mind, I like, through the grief that we have had, I like to think of the reason why some people get to stay here on Earth until they, you know, are 98 years old or whatever the case may be, and some people can't, is because God has a purpose there just as much as here. And sometimes people, he needs, whether you want to say the stronger, you know, there, however you want to interpret that, I think that there is a purpose that he needs some of us here, and there's a purpose that he needs them there as well. And there's just, it helps me to think of that in a lighter way, like he needed him there for whatever reason. And XYZ put that, you know, I don't know if that, I don't know. I just have always thought of it like that, whether it's true or not. But
I had to become comfortable with the idea of Hunter is now happy and he isn't in pain, you know, and I did have a dream shortly after he passed. I don't remember exactly, but I remember him showing me, or who, you know, my dream. In the dream, he was showing me this stream, and it was just peaceful and beautiful. And he said to me, and I can't remember the exact words, but the gist was, "Mom, I found my peace." And every time, you know, we have a trail that we like to hike in Pine that has a creek. And every time I look in that creek, I remind myself of he is at peace. And I do believe that. And he is healed. I do believe that. And I have to let go of the idea that it was supposed to be me that helped him. And he was supposed to be here, you know, and it's just bigger than we are. The concept of life and death and like you said, what our purpose is on earth, it's out of my comprehension. And, you know, why does God intervene in some regards and others? You know, I remember my mom, "Oh, Vicky, listen to this story. Like this woman's car wouldn't start. She was at a traffic light, her car stalled. And then as soon as she got started, this car went racing through the intersection. It would have hit her head on." And I'm like, yeah. Why didn't he do that with Hunter? You know, I don't know. But it's difficult to shed that lens, you know, to look through a different lens, to shed that light on it, because you are so swallowed up in your pain and your grief and your loss that it's very difficult to look at it from that perspective. But I do believe those things to be true.
You talked about a couple different, well, throughout the, one of the things was why a lot, right? Or what if, or you also, you know, when Hunter was giving you some of these signs and stuff, it's different than what you thought before, right? And we've talked about this before on other episodes, how we have these preconceived thoughts, or we put God in a box, and
Absolutely. It's,
you know, when, and he has shown you that it's not the way that you always thought, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so just let that happen, right? I'm not telling you this. I'm telling our listeners, when God is showing us things that are different than what we thought before, just accept it and say, "Thank you for teaching me, for opening my mind, for showing me more light and truth," right? I think we need to continually look for the things that God is trying to show us and teach us. And in your grief and in any of the grief that we go through when we're in the middle of it, it's so easy for us to think, what if, or why this? But, and you touched on this, eventually or somehow we need to get to a point, instead of thinking what if, we need to think what now?
What exactly?
What do I need to do with this now, God? What do you need me to do now? You know,
100%.
And that can be really hard, because I've never been through what you've been through, but I can only imagine that the guilt and the, you know, that game that we play with ourselves all the time. But it sounds like finally you've been able to get to a point where it's what now, you know, because you're not going to get those answers. And that's okay. We have to be okay with not understanding.
Yeah. Right?
We might not ever know why we haven't been able to have our own biological kids.
Right.
But we do have some answers, right? You know, our viewers aren't going to see, but you were able to just meet Reese not too long ago, and she's an answer, right? And she's an answered prayer for us. And so, but Vicky, I'm so honored that, you know, you were able to come to us and open up and share your story. It sounds like you haven't shared much, and that just tugged at my heart even more that it was with us. So thank you so much. Yeah, I'd love to ask for a little bit of advice. Back on the grief thing.
Mm-hmm.
Grief is really hard to go through. It's really hard to see other loved ones going through grief. And you never have the right thing to say. A lot of times we have the wrong thing to say. You know, like you said, everything happens for a reason. You know, that's probably not a good thing to say to somebody when they're going through grief.
Yes, please don't.
But what's some advice that you could give to somebody, not somebody that's going through grief, but for somebody that is trying to be an angel to somebody else that might be going through it? How do we do that?
Yes, thank you for asking that question, because what I've learned is we don't expect you to have the answers. We don't expect you to say the magic words that's going to make it all make sense. We just need some validation. And so for you to just don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call. Don't be afraid to just swing by and check in. It's going to mean more than you know. And just being willing to just even just sit with the person and let them cry. And, you know, don't be afraid to talk about the person they lost, to bring up their name. You know, some of the things that meant so much to me is my friend Sarah made a point to put Hunter's birthday and the day he passed in her calendar. And she recognized both of those dates with me. And that was so touching. And it wasn't a magic word. She just said, "Hey, I'm thinking of you today. I love you." I said, "Did you know it was Hunter's birthday today?" She said, "Yeah, I put it in my calendar." You know, she took the time, and all it was she just put a note in her calendar, you know. And I did tell a friend of mine whose daughter was going through she had a very traumatic loss. And she called me and she said, "I'm so sorry to do this to you so soon to losing Hunter, but I just don't know what to say to her," you know. And I said, just be there, let her talk, be a safe resource to let her talk. And she may say some crazy things, but don't make her feel crazy. Just validate her, you know. And for her, it was traumatic. So she had the PTSD like I did, and the irrational fears and things. And I said, just let her know she's normal. It's normal to think these crazy things. You know, I obviously now, and it's better now, but in the beginning, I had this horrific fear of my twins, something happened to them. Cause I'm like, I can't survive it if I lose one more family member. And they're in construction and they're in demolition, and, you know, they're not a, I'm just gonna wrap them in bubble wrap and send them to work. But I have to trust God in that too, you know? And, but the point of that being, we have some irrational thoughts and we have some irrational fears, and we just want to feel normal. And that's why that book was so important to me, because she was so raw and honest about her feelings, and it validated me. I'm like, oh, I'm not crazy. Someone else has thought the same thing, you know? And for my significant other and I, he had to learn how, you know, it was a learning process. It's okay. Like I said, if you stumble and it's awkward, it's okay. But he didn't give up trying. But there were times where I'd start talking about Hunter and he'd change the subject and it was offensive to me. And I mean, if you don't want to talk about Hunter, just tell me. "No, babe, I'm just trying to change your mindset. It upsets me when I see you upset." You know, I told him, "No, I just need you to let me get it out, because these are thoughts that are just ruminating in my head and I'm obsessing about them. And if I can just speak them and let them pass through, then I can move on and I can stop thinking about it in that moment." You know, and coupling that with physical movement, you know, just go get your friend and go for a walk, honestly, and just let them talk.
That's all great advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Vicky, last question. What is something that you know to be true?
What I know to be true is you aren't alone. As alone as I felt, it was me putting that on myself. No one knows this kind of pain. No one understands this. Nothing like this has ever happened to anybody but me. And it's not true. And you'll find the more you do share, you'll find that there are people out there that have gone through this, and you truly aren't alone. There are angels, both physical on earth and spiritual angels, that are with you. I, in the beginning, was too angry to see it. But you are not alone.
Amen.
Yes, amen.
Thank you. Thank you again. And I'm going to send a thank you to your twins and to your fiance. Thank you to them for being angels for you and that support.
They were amen.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.